Hey y'all, welcome back to another episode of Put It In Your Pocket, your source for all niche music trivia. My name's Caroline, and today I'm so excited to be talking about one of my favorite and most inspiring artists of all time, Labi Siffre. Labi Siffre is someone that I knew I wanted to talk about when I first found out that I was gonna have the opportunity to do this show because he is such an important artist to me personally and is one of the most prominent figures in my life. My journey of loving and discovering music, and I have a very special connection with his music, but he's not very well known, sadly. He is not as well known as, the Beach Boys and Nirvana and all these people that we've been talking about, Steely Dan. He's nowhere near as popular as these people, but his influence stretches very far and wide. And I think that at the end of this episode, you will recognize him and his influence kind of everywhere because he is such an important figure in moving forward European pop in the 70s into the 80s, but also comes back around and has a very large influence on early 2000s rap. So he's one of those people that has a lot of really cool stories involved with him, which makes him a great candidate for this podcast. But also, he's just such a genius and a really interesting person to discuss concerning his music and his ideologies as well. He's very philosophical. So there's lots of things about him that make him really fun to talk about. So I'm just really excited to kind of get into him and his history a little bit and why I love him so much. So Labi Siffre, I'm assuming, is somebody that you have not heard of before. If you have, again, please contact me. I need more people who are fans of him. But if you haven't, you're definitely in the vast majority because his name is not brought up a lot, even though, like I said, his influence, covers of his songs, and samples using his songs are definitely things that you would know about. He is a British singer, songwriter, and poet. He's also an essayist, so he has books of poetry out and also writes like little essays kind of on like philosophy and how he sees life. He was born the 25th of June, 1945. He formed his first band at 16 and began playing the jazz guitar in groups around like Soho and those areas in the late 60s. And he released six albums between 1970 and 1975. In the early 70s, three of his singles became hits: It Must Be Love, Crying, Laughing, Loving, Lying, and Watch Me. Those songs hit number 14, number 11, and number 29, respectively. All of those were from 1970 to 1972. So the interesting thing about Labi Siffre's discography is that when we talk about artists that are very poetic and very lyrics focused, and they produce and write all of their own music, usually they are fanatical about that. You think about like the Bob Dylans and the Elton Johns that wrote and produced like hundreds of songs, in these super short time spans, and their albums are just coming out constantly. They're still putting out multiple albums a year. Labi Siffre is not that way. Labi Siffre has faced a lot of challenges in his lifetime by being a openly gay black man in the early 60s, going into the 70s, during the time when his career is starting to come up, and especially in England at the time. This is a really, really big roadblock into him having commercial success. And so he is going to eventually, in the late 70s, get really fed up with a lot of the treatment and attitudes around him and his music, and feeling kind of isolated from the rest of the music industry. And he's going to take a break until the 1980s, when he releases a few more songs. He puts out a few more albums, but other than that, we really don't have a lot of music from him. But the things that he did put out when he was creating music are so important, influential, and just really good. He fed us well when he could. But I do think that's an interesting thing about Labi Siffre, is that he wasn't always just pumping out music. He was very selective and careful with what he, allowed people to see and hear from him, which I think is interesting because that's not really typical for artists like him. He even says himself that he is a very serious person. Those are his words, serious person. And I think that's interesting because, as you hear the songs that I'm going to play you, he's very personal, very, soft and kind in his lyrics, but also very bold and, comfortable in himself. And it kind of comes across as maybe like a meeker, quieter, more observant persona, especially in his earlier music. And for him to say that he's very serious and calculated, again, makes him different and set apart from other artists like him. These, you know, indie acoustic guitar playing artists in the early 70s, these kind of like folky ballad singers are not that way. You know, they're just kind of saying whatever comes to their mind, and then you kind of have this like stream of consciousness vibe with all of the music that they're producing. But Libby Sifry is not that way. He has a quote from a Rolling Stone interview that he did in the early 80s where he says, "I came to the conclusion that there was a group of people who took it upon themselves to think as a duty, as a vocation. And those people would be philosophers and artists. I decided at a young age that I would be an artist philosopher or a philosopher artist." That is such an interesting quote. I've never heard that perspective before, but Libby Sifry is basically saying here that he realized at a very young age that he was a very deep thinker and very contemplative, and that he knew that no matter what he did with his life, that's what he would do. He would craft whatever art he crafted from those perspectives and that philosophy that he has within himself, which is very interesting. He has a lot of quotes like that where he talks about being younger and knowing from a very early age he wanted to be a musician and he wanted to be someone who made a lot of change in the world. He's always been a very, like I said, calculated is a good word for him. And that makes him so interesting. And I think that's why his music, although not great in quantity, is really great in quality, because he is so selective and careful with his words. When you see interviews from him, he's so incredibly well-spoken, which is also not always the case for really amazing music artists. That's not really their medium typically. They're better, you know, in song or poetry form. But Libby Sifry is very careful with his words and he chooses them very eloquently. And he's an amazing speaker. So kind of getting away from those abstract things a little bit, his third album, Crying, Laughing, Loving Line, is released in 1972, and it contains the song It Must Be Love and My Song, which are both songs that you guys are going to hear in this episode. The title track, Crying, Laughing, Loving Line, is one of his best-known songs. Olivia Newton-John covered it on her 1975 album Clearly Love. Whitney covered it on their 2020 album Candid, and Peach Pit covered it on their 2025 expansive version of their album Magpie. That's probably my favorite cover of this song. If you want to check that out, it's really good. And all of the songs on this album were written, performed, and produced by Libby Sifry. Like I said, he was super hands-on with his music and very careful to have everything exactly the way that he wanted it to be. One of my favorite things that he has said about this album, he gave an interview when it came out. And in that interview, he says that there's too much popularity surrounding artists in pop music and too much focus on the people behind the songs and not the songs themselves. And he kind of says that he wishes that when people heard his music, that they didn't think about who wrote it at all. They didn't know anything about him, and that they just listened to the music and thought of it kind of as an abstract from anybody. And his music is so applicable to absolutely anyone. It's very accessible. I think that's one of the reasons why I love him so much, is because it's not very specific one way or the other. When he writes a love song, it's about love. You know, he's not saying names or using specific pronouns or any of those things, or talking about super specific situations. It's just kind of things that everybody can relate to. And I love that about him. And that is a skill. It sounds like it would be easier to do with like casting a wide net in your music, but it's not. It's hard to write about something greater and bigger than yourself. And he does that super well. But I think that he has a really good point there about pop music being, you know, kind of obsessive with artists and their stories, and kind of playing off of those parasocial relationships that fans have with artists. And I think that nowadays, it's even more true. You know, when we think about pop music, the really heavy hitters, I think of like the Sabrina Carpenters, Taylor Swift's, Chappell Roan's, Billie Eilish. They are the type of artists that we probably know way too much about, and that does affect our perception of their music. When, you know, Billie Eilish puts out a breakup song, we all know, or think we know, who that song is about. And based on your opinion on that relationship, who was in the right, who was in the wrong, that, you know, can make you angry at that song. You know, that can make you, you know, happy and, you know, cheering for her with that song. That can make you, you know, not want to listen to it at all, because we think we know these situations. And I think that that is absolutely a great point, that maybe we know too much for our own good. And we've kind of gotten away a little bit from enjoying music just as a medium. And rather, we kind of tie it and chain it to the artist that created it. and kind of bog it down with that, and maybe we stop ourselves from having productive, in-depth discussions about it because we're so caught up in the people who created it. So I've always loved that quote, and I think that he definitely kind of predicted the future there with saying that it was an increasingly worse problem. I do think that's a really interesting perspective that he had even then, because pop music has changed a lot since then, and it's definitely gotten, you know, a lot more true. But the first single that he released from this album was called It Must Be Love, and it was released in 1971. It reached number 14th on January 1972 on the UK Singles Chart, and its lack of details, like I talked about earlier, makes it relatable for anyone. It Must Be Love is also the name of an Alan Jackson song. I always think of that when I hear this song, and both of those songs are, you know, kind of catch-all, again, casting a wide net just about love. But LaBee Siffre sings from the heart, and you can tell immediately. I think you'll know what I mean when I play you this song, but he is such a captivating person to listen to, because everything he says with such certainty, and his delivery is so confident that you know that he believes what he's saying, and you want to believe it too. And we're kind of building up to the last song that I'm going to play you guys, which is about that very concept, but he is so brave and bold and always unique and true to himself that you can't help but fall in love with him. And I think that this song is a really good first showcase of the amazing poet and captivating lyricist that he is, but also the type of guy that puts out a song and it makes you instantly feel better. This is such a feel-good song. And at the end of the day, that is what he has done with his career. He's helped people. He's made people feel less alone, and he's brought so much joy into the world, which is a shame because we don't know him that well, but I'm hoping I will spread the good gospel of LaBee Siffre with this episode. So give It Must Be Love a listen, and I hope that you enjoy it as much as I have.
I never thought I'd miss you half as much as I do. And I never thought I'd feel this way, the way I feel about you. As soon as I wake up, any night, any day, I know that it's you I need to take the blues away. It must be love. Without words, bless you and bless me, baby. Bless the bees and the birds. I've got to be near you every night, every day. I couldn't be happy.
I think one of the things that I love most about LaBie is his voice when he sings and when he talks. You might not be able to tell from that song, but he does have an English accent, and because that's where he lived most of his life. And his speaking voice is gorgeous, and his singing voice is so down to earth and human. You can tell that he's just talking to you and singing to you like you're a friend of his, and that he wants to share, you know, this beautiful emotion and feeling that he's having with the world just because he wants everybody to feel as good as he does in that moment. And I love that. He is such, just such a beautiful person. I could talk about him for hours. I love him so much. But another fun fact about that song really quick is that the band Madness released a cover of It Must Be Love in the 80s. I don't have the exact date written down. I just thought of it when we heard that song last. And it's a really good cover. It is a lot more popular than the original. You actually may have heard that song before. I'm interested to see who recognizes that song from the cover that came out later. But LaBie Siffre is actually featured in the music video playing the violin, or, you know, pretending to play the violin. So give that a listen, or, you know, check that out really quick if you want to. I forgot to mention that earlier. But the next song that we're going to move to is a song called Bless the Telephone. It is one of his more well-known songs, and it's definitely like a fan favorite. I would say like top three most popular songs with the fans and like the niche LaBie Siffre obsessive community. It was released in 1971, and it's a song similar to It Must Be Love. It's a lot shorter, so I figured I would just, you know, kind of slip it in really quick because it is so beautiful, and it's definitely a must listen when you're getting into his discography. And in a 2022 interview with The Guardian, LaBie Siffre says, "I've always taken love very seriously. Not just what it is, but how disastrous it would be without it." One of the more interesting stories from LaBie Siffre's life is, he kind of says it in a lot of interviews, but he talks about being really young, about 13 years old, and deciding right then that for the rest of his life, he would spend it in pursuit of love. That was his goal and end-all be-all for everything. This song is definitely a really good representation of that quote. He's just admiring the little things, and appreciating the love that he has when he has it. And I like playing these two songs back to back, It Must Be Love into Bless the Telephone. And I kind of think of it as a progressing relationship. You know, he realizes that he's in love, and then it's the little happy moments that he shares on songs like Bless the Telephone. I think they go really well together. Atwood Magazine described Bless the Telephone as sonic love, which that's such a cute little quote. It definitely is. It's like LaBie Siffre's words are so gorgeous. I'm going to say that 100 times throughout this episode, but they're so gorgeous that it really is like sonic love and sonic compassion and kindness and eloquence. It feels like you're right there with him, listening to him tell this story to you. One of the things I love about him is that all of his music videos are just him sitting on a stool playing his acoustic guitar and singing the song. And again, that was kind of at a time where music videos were not really what we know them to be today. But even then, when they asked him, you know, what do you want to be the visual representation of this song, it was a black background, him in his sweater playing the song on guitar, because he wanted it to speak for itself, like I mentioned that he said earlier. I think that's a really interesting choice, and definitely was not how pop music was headed even at that time. I also think it's interesting in this song how he is praising technology like the telephone and not putting it down. I think there's a kind of a trend of love songs in the mid to late 70s, you know, we're getting a lot of new technology then, that are kind of putting down things like technology and saying, you know, we need things to go back to the way they used to be. You know, we used to, you know, talk to each other face to face and, you know, make trips to see each other. And that's a classic, like, you know, every generation has done that. But I love that this song is appreciating, like, now we have the telephone and I can call you whenever and we can talk and I just like to hear your voice. And I think that's so beautiful. And I've said a lot of times, you know, I was definitely born in the right generation, which I think a lot of people would disagree with me. You know, people who are modern day music fans are always saying, you know, oh, pop music now sucks, or oh, I wish I was, you know, alive when these songs were coming out. But guys, I love my iPad. I love playing video games and watching movies and TV and streaming music, and I would not have it any other way. And I say that as, you know, a collector of physical media and, you know, a lover of all things old. I definitely was born in the right generation. And I think LaBeouCiffre is saying that now in the 70s, even back then, that, you know, this was a way for him to better communicate the love that had been so important to him, even at 13 years old. And I think that it takes a special kind of person to recognize that and, you know, kind of form an entire song around that concept. It's just so fresh and interesting. So give Bless the Telephone a listen.
It's nice to hear your voice again. I've waited all day long, even wrote a song for you. It's strange the way you make me feel. With just a word or two, I'd like to do the same for you. It's nice to hear you say hello. And how are things with you? I love you. But very soon it's time to go. An office job to do while I'm here writing songs for you. Strange how a phone call can change your day. Take you away, away from the feeling of being alone. Bless the telephone. It's nice the way you say my name. Not very fast or slow, just soft and low, the same as when you tell me how you feel. I feel the same way too. I'm very much in love with you. I'm very much in love with you.
So now that we've gotten a few originals down and we've gotten to listen to some of those, I get to talk about possibly the most interesting part of LaBeouCiffre's story, because I love sharing this little piece of music trivia. I guess that's what the show is all about. So here's something to put in your pocket. LaBeouCiffre's song, I Got The, that's what it's called, I Got The, with three little dot dot dots after it. It's a really cool kind of like funk fusion song. So it's a little bit, it's actually a lot bit different from the two songs that you guys just heard. It was sampled in, most notably, the 1999 Eminem single, My Name Is. And I'll show you the example in a moment. And actually, as a result of My Name Is being such a famous song and popular song, LaBeouCiffre's version of I Got The was finally released as a single in 2003. So that's kind of how it got a little bit more popular after that. And the track was also featured in the Better Call Saul episode, Bagman, for any chemistry fans out there, I guess. LaBeouCiffre, interestingly enough, initially denied Dre and Eminem permission to use the sample based on his objection to like homophobic and misogynistic content in the song, but ultimately agreed to let them release the record. But he had only heard the song's clean version and didn't really know that it would be used on the explicit version as well. So that kind of begs the question again, is it better for someone as LaBeouCiffre is, and you know, an activist, a philosopher, someone who is always standing up for what's right and is against, obviously, homophobia and misogyny, is it better for him to, you know, keep that song to himself and say, no, find another sample, my music will not be used for this? Or is it better for him to give it to this music duo that he knows it'll be a huge hit, you know, a different genre, obviously very different content, different set of fans completely, and have his music, therefore, you know, reproduced and reintroduced to a new generation, an entirely new set of listeners? I don't have that answer. Ultimately, he chose the latter, but I think that sampling is a really interesting concept, especially with examples like this, where the two different songs are on completely different sides of the spectrum. But LaBeouCiffre has a quote on this subject, where he says, "When things have not been as popular as I thought they should have been," talking about his music, "I always felt that eventually they would be recognized as a good song, because a good song will never die." I love that quote. I love that quote so much. What a profound thing to say, and what a wise thing to say. But absolutely, I mean, I'm going to be honest, guys, without songs like My Name Is and the next song that we're going to be talking about soon that also samples Labee Siffre, I don't know if I would have found him as easily. I think I eventually would have found my way to him because he is influential outside of those things, yes. But it came to me a lot quicker because I'm a fan of Eminem, Dre, and this next song we're going to talk about. So I would argue that it's important to have those songs shared and reintroduced to new generations for that very reason. And the same thing can be said for, you know, movie remakes. Is it better to be pumping out all of these music biopics that we're seeing nowadays, even though they might not be that accurate or the best quality, just as a means to introduce new generations to, you know, Bruce Springsteen, which is the one that's coming out next, or Bob Dylan or Elton John, and all of the other many, many biopics that we've had come out lately? I don't have the answer. And I'm sure there's some sort of middle of the road that's a lot better than those two extremes. But I do think that's a really interesting concept that definitely comes up a lot in Labee Siffre's discography. So I'm going to play you a clip here of Labee Siffre's song, I Got The... And here's it compared to the background of Eminem's song, My Name Is.
Hi, my name is what? My name is what? My name is
Sadie.
My name is what? My name is what?
Now you'll never unhear I Got The and the guitar riff from My Name Is. So every time I hear that song on the radio, I have to go into a whole spiel about Labee Siffre. I'm very sorry to everybody who has been put in that situation from me. But the next sample that I'm going to be talking about is Kanye West's song, I Wonder, which is probably one of, if not my favorite Kanye West song. It's an amazing, amazing song. I won't be playing it in full here, but I love that song so much. It samples Labee Siffre's song, My Song, which we will be playing in full because it is my favorite Labee Siffre song. So both of these songs are great and I love them so much. They're very near and dear to my heart, which is why I think it's so awesome that they cross over like this. But I Wonder by Kanye West is a very explicit sample of Labee Siffre's music. My Name Is was just, you know, that background riff that's in the middle of the song. But I Wonder uses both Labee Siffre's vocals, music, and it even lists him as a writer and performer and producer in the notes on this song. So if you were to look at like the physical copy and the liner notes, or just like scroll down on whatever music streaming service you're using, it would have Labee Siffre's name attached to it. So that's how heavy of a sample this is. But both of these songs together are very interesting. And I think Kanye West is one of the greatest samplers and producers of the 21st century because he understands thematic influence very well, and I Wonder definitely goes well with My Song by Labee Siffre. So he knows his stuff, obviously, it's Kanye West. But in My Song by Labee Siffre, he says, "I may not always sing in tune, and sometimes you don't hear me, but you don't have to be near me to know that I'm singing." And then I Wonder by Kanye West says, "I've been waiting on this my whole life. These dreams be waking me up at night. You say I think I'm never wrong. You know what? Maybe you're right." I love the comparison of both of those little lyrical section stanza things. I can't call both of them bridges because they're not all the way that. But both of these sections are saying the same thing. I may not always make sense to you. You may not always understand what I'm saying or why I'm chasing these dreams. But you know what? I don't think I'm wrong. I know what I'm doing and I am confident in the way that I am doing things. And it's that type of boldness and confidence and assuredness in the things that you're doing that makes an amazing artist and performer. Because if all the people that we know and love throughout music history had second-guessed themselves too many times or held back to not be different, we would not have the music that we love. Right? We would not have the crazy stories that we talk about on the show. We wouldn't have the weird off-the-wall lyrics and influences that come before and after them without that precedent. And that's why both of these songs are so important. So I'm going to play you a little clip of I Wonder
dreams come true. And I wonder if you know what it means, what it means. And I wonder if you know what it means, what it means. And I wonder if you know what it means to find your dreams. And I wonder.
I've been waiting all this my whole life, life.
And here's a smaller clip of my song.
And I wonder if you know what it means to find your dreams come true.
I just wanted to go ahead and make sure that the comparisons were very obvious before we play the entirety of my song. But you can definitely see the extreme similarities between both of those songs. And like I said, Kanye sampled that directly, and he's not trying to hide it or cover it up or steal it or anything. You know, he's using that as the basis for his song. But I just love this whole story. I love that both of these songs come together to kind of create this saga of the same themes. I just think it's so interesting. And I definitely think that LaBeeCiffrey made a very smart choice allowing this sample to happen, because this did introduce a whole new wave of music lovers to LaBeeCiffrey's music. There is a direct correlation between the release of I Wonder and a spike in LaBeeCiffrey's listeners, and I definitely can say that I had not heard of LaBeeCiffrey before hearing this song. And I went in and looked at what the sample was, because Kanye samples always steer you in the right direction, and found LaBeeCiffrey through that. So that is a direct, you know, admittance from me that I didn't know about this amazing artist without this. So I think that there is definitely a good, I think that there is definitely good reason for sampling. If anybody was on the edge of that, you know, that is my argument for that. And that's kind of the really interesting part about this whole story and LaBeeCiffrey's legacy, is that you can have your niche as an artist and be yourself and be unique and bold and all of these things that LaBeeCiffrey is, and then still hand over things to the next generation to create even more art that you know is good quality and that you know is continuing your legacy. And I just love that. But my song by itself is so incredible that we're gonna play it in full because it's my favorite LaBeeCiffrey song. But this song is, in my opinion, the best written on this album. And that's a very, very hot take, because there's two songs, Crying, Laughing, Loving Line and Cannock Chase, that are considered to be his best written songs. I would argue that my song is even better written than those, but it's his growing delivery and assuredness in himself, but also his amazing lyricism and just the way that the music, you know, swells and ebbs and flows with his words. It's so beautifully and perfectly crafted that I think it's a real travesty that a lot of people haven't heard it. So hopefully you recognize this in some form or fashion, even if it is through I Wonder. But if you haven't, you are in for such a treat, and I'm so excited to be able to share it with you guys. Here is my song. I know I probably say this a lot, but one of my favorite songs of all time. And I really hope that you enjoy it as much as I do. Give it a listen.
This is my song, and no one can take it away. It's been so long, but now you're here, here to stay. And I wonder if you know what it means to find your dreams come true. This is my song, and no one can make it alive. It's been so long since someone could make me cry. And I wonder if you know what it means to love. go by. I may not always sing in tune, and sometimes you don't hear me, but you don't have to be near me to know that I'm singing. This is my song, and nothing can make it die. It's been so long, and it's stronger, I know why. And I wonder if you really, really know that as long as I live, I will sing my song for you. I may not always sing in tune, and sometimes you don't hear me, but you don't have to be near to know that I'm singing. This is my song, and nothing can make it die. It's been so long, and it's stronger, I know. I wonder if you really, really know that as long as I live, I will sing my song. That as long as I live, I will sing my song.
I'm so glad that I finally got to introduce that song on this podcast. I've been waiting ever since I did the first episode to talk about Labise Siffre somehow, some way, and be able to play that song because it is an anthem. It is just so gorgeous. It is an anthem. It makes you want to stand up and, I don't know, run for president or something. It makes you want to get up and do something, which is what music and art is supposed to do. And Labise Siffre, at the end of the day, that's him. He is an inspirer. He is a creator. He is someone who hands down and gives and gives and gives to the next generations after him, which cannot be said for a lot of artists. I think that we kind of, as humans, have this innate, you know, want to kind of keep things for ourselves and to say, you know, I built my mountain. Now you guys need to do the same. But Labise Siffre is always selflessly hyping up and propping up these new artists with their covers and samples of him, and he is completely okay with the spotlight being away from him, even though I think that's such a shame because he is such an amazing artist. So I hope that you enjoyed learning, hopefully something new, about Labise Siffre today, and I would definitely encourage you to check out his other things. Crying, Laughing, Loving, Lying is a really good album to start with, but everything that he's put out is just incredible. Like I said, he's a very great guy to go to if you want quality over quantity. So, you know, enjoy what you have when you have it, because he doesn't have hundreds of albums and singles, but he is still alive today. I follow him on Instagram. So if you want to give him a follow somewhere, definitely would encourage you to do that as well, because he's so well-spoken and really great in interviews as well. So he just has so much wisdom to share with us, and I'm just so grateful that we exist in the same time as him, because he is so incredible and so inspiring. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Let me know what you want to hear next, what you liked about this one, and tune in Mondays at 7 to hear the next episode of Put It In Your Pocket. My name's Caroline. Thank you for listening.